To set the modern context, Atul Gawande points out that we are actually quite new to the aging process. Human beings have existed for approximately 200,000 years, and for all but the past couple of hundred years, the average lifespan of human beings has been 30 years or less. Research suggests, for example, people in the Roman Empire had an average lifespan of 28 years. So the natural course was to die before old age. In the new context, the average lifespan in much of the world is climbing past 80. So we are actually oddities living well beyond our appointed time, it seems. When we study aging, what we are trying to understand is not so much a natural process as an unnatural process. So within that context today, I ask some questions that many of us have been thinking about a long time. How do we think about, feel about, talk about, and make decisions about how we approach the fading of the light? This is not just about hospice in the last weeks or months. This is about the last chapters of our lives. Wonder is embedded in one of the core values of our congregation. We experience awe at the mystery of existence, and spurred by curiosity, use our intellect and imagination for lifelong learning about our fellow beings in the here and now and the there and then. Last month, our theme was busyness. In a culture where busyness pervades like unhealthy groundwater, we encouraged ourselves to ask, when organizing my days, why do I do what I do? How do I prioritize my time and why? What are some of the main ingredients for joy and meaning in my life? These are the questions we're encouraging each other to ask. Many of us are reminded that when we shed the coat of unhelpful busyness, we can prioritize paying attention and opening up to experiences of awe and wonder. We can see deep purple in the Japanese maple and enjoy laughter of a friend or a stranger. When we feel wonder, our hearts open more to the endlessly mind-boggling fact that we humans are related to all plants and animals. Scientist Michael Dowd explains, 400 million years ago, the ancient lobe-finned fish left the ocean, set out across the tidal flat in search of fresh water. And the efforts of that historic fish were contributions to its later-to-be relatives, a long-necked giraffe extending to the highest leaf for snack, the humpback whale doing 90-degree backflips in the deepest oceans, and all of us sitting here together in this room today, all relatives. This is our common, most wonderful creation story. This month, contemplating wonder, many of our conversations lead us to talking about the birthing process, the miracle, the sperm and the egg joining forces, growing to the point of the mother giving birth to the baby. How fascinating to contemplate trillions of births that have happened on the planet for all species, and then, of course, the trillions of lives, all of which have their ending stories. Every animal dies. In my ministry, I have experienced situations where the last chapters of a story go poorly. One family suffered as a middle-aged man shut himself up in his apartment and drank himself to death on vodka. After rejecting many intervention attempts by his family and myself, Frank was so isolated in the end that he lay dead in his bed for 4 days before anybody found him. There are other stories of powerlessness and despair and isolation in the endings that many of us have experienced. In my ministry, I have experienced situations where we have done well. In the last chapter of Bob West's life, Bob allowed us to hold a celebration for life, of life for him and with him. We had two memorials for Bob, one when he was alive, one when he was passed. In his presence, we listened to music and read poems in his honor. But we also talked of his life stories and told Bob to his face how much he meant to us. In the last weeks, I was among the lucky ones who held Bob's hand, sang songs to him, told him I loved him. In that situation, we were all blessed to connect and support Bob, a most beautiful man. Today we're going to celebrate Edna Jones. That was a good story of connection and empowerment, even when it was very, very tough and difficult for Edna. And on Saturday, we're going to celebrate Shirley Drayton, a long-time member of this church who moved to Madison for her last chapter. A lot of love and connection with Shirley in her last chapters. Who were you close to in the last chapters of their life? How did you help to write those last chapters with somebody? We all know stories that end poorly. During the last days of one man's life, he laments too many chemo treatments, at least one too many surgeries for his cancer. He regrets not stopping enough to just be with his family and his friends from his hometown. And we embrace, and we have to tell the stories of connection and veneration when they happen. Gawande tells stories such as Felix and Stella, who experienced old age as a continuous series of losses. They put it nicely, because we all know, my minister taught me the second I said I'm going into seminary, he said, never lie to the people. Getting old can be nasty and tough and terrible. Never lie. Don Wheats told me that many times. That's the reality. And Felix and Stella knew this. Stella lost her vision. Her hearing was impaired. She became foggy in her memories. Times she didn't know who was sitting with her at the dinner table. Stella and Felix felt the sorrow of their losses for sure, but also the pleasures of what they still had. They still had their own private, decades-long conversation that had never stopped. He had found great purpose in caring for her, and likewise, she found great meaning in being there for him. The physical presence of each other gave them comfort. He dressed her and bathed her. When they walked, they held hands. Those moments, Felix said, remained among their most cherished. Then she failed. They cried. They said goodbye. Stanford psychologist Laura Carstensen believes that perspective of the elderly is critical for satisfaction, the perspective the person holds. And she says how we seek to spend our time often depends on how much time we perceive ourselves to have. So she says when life's fragility is primed, that's a great phrase, when life's fragility is primed, people's goals and motives in everyday life often shift. So she says it's perspective, not age, that matters. The 42-year-old firefighter knew he was going to die. His perspective changed. And it's also perspective in the loved ones. When we see death as the enemy and some natural thing that we're trying to just extend as far as we humanly can, we lose out on a chance to connect on that magic time. A window opens, I believe, at that point to cherish some love and some heart. Carstensen found that far from growing unhappier, people reported more positive emotions as they aged. They became less prone to anxiety, depression, and anger. They experienced trials for sure, but more moments of poignancy. That's a mixture of positive and negative emotions. Even as old age narrowed on the lives they led, they had more satisfying and stable experiences. And that can be true for the ones connected to those who are in the last chapter as well. As I noted, people are living much longer in many places around the world. And sadly, as this has happened in the United States, too often we have lost veneration and honoring of the elderly. Too often we have just said we're going to fight death to the max and fix as long as we can. We lost comfort with the dying process. We are connected to many cultures that is in the 15th century. There was a book, Ars Moriendi, in Latin. It was known in almost every Western language, The Ways of Dying. It was a book that everyone talked about. Here's how we die well together. We've gone so far away from that that many times the elderly felt forgotten and isolated. Telemarketers and scam artists worked their way on our elderly. We're not dying. We have not been dying well as a society. But I think a shift is happening. More and more people are talking like this book has caught fire, Being Mortal. Here's an example of one of the problems many are trying to work with. Gwandi points out that more than half of the elderly living in long-term care have to run down their savings to zero in order to draw more fully on government support. More than half of those in long-term care have to run their savings to zero. And many studies show that geriatric doctors can do a good job of reducing the chance for those folks to have depression or disability. The docs can do a better job controlling arthritis, making sure that the people eat square meals, reduce isolation. However, those things are not paid for by Medicaid and Medicare or most insurance. $25,000 pacemakers are paid for, but we are not prioritizing enough nutrition and medication balances and living situations as a part of how we as a nation take care of our elderly. Now, I know, I'm at a point in the sermon, a lot of macro level economic and policy overwhelming challenges. But we can, including in advocacy, make a difference. We can break it down and make a positive impact in how we relate and work with each other. I see blessings when people stay present in the process of the last chapters with the fear and the pain, but also the joy and the miracle. When people are present with each other, they have the courage, the ground of being, to take healthy actions. We can face head on what Gwandi calls the three-headed monster of loneliness, boredom, and powerlessness. Too often our elderly are left in situations where they feel loneliness, boredom, and powerlessness. There's a lot of wonderful things happening. Just the simple but beautiful programs of putting animals with elderly, dogs and cats and birds, interactions, excitement, taking care of someone. Now I have responsibility to take care of this bird that sings songs to us on our floor here. Visiting amongst family and neighbors. That's old school. Just visit the oldest person on your block once in a while and bring some brownies or extra food and say hi to Mr. Frank. That's old school. Just connect in coffee hour at church across the generations. That's what you get with church. Every generation gets to connect. Doesn't happen in a lot of places. In your more personal relations, sit down, make time, talk, and listen. Let the person decide and talk to you about, is she going to take treatment X or Y, and what are the reasons you want to know? Ask a person what's important in her life. A good question for any of us to know is, I want to know how much you are willing to go through in order to stay alive. How much are you willing to go through to stay alive? Simple, scary, but you can talk about that with your loved ones, and many of you do. Gwandi's father did not live to 110. He lived into his 80s in America. He also was a physician. And he focused on what was important with his wife and his kids, his colleagues. When he was going down in energy and up in problems, he Skyped with family and his buddies back in his home village in India, who he stayed in touch with his entire life. He had been a professor at a university in Ohio. He went there to the graduation ceremony, surprised everyone. He just said, today we're going. He got out his walker. He went across the gymnasium floor, sat down in a seat, and experienced the last graduation ceremony he was going to ever be at that university. That mattered. Then he wound down. His world narrowed. He lost capacities, and he hurt, and he hurt. And he hurt. And he said, I don't want to feel like this anymore. No mas. And they made the changes. With a 42-year-old firefighter, dad, and his wife, and the 3-year-old, life's fragility was primed. And they all surrendered. And they held one another. They got out the teddy bears. We are born, we live, we love, we die. May we not be afraid of the fading of the light. This dimming is a subtle and wondrous part of our humanity. Our bodies die, our love lives on powerfully evermore. Blessings be. Amen.